Welcome back to Be More Super, the podcast, where we explore the world of entertainment with celebrity interviews from your favorite movies and TV shows. So grab your popcorn and let's get to know these stars better and what really makes them super. We are brought to you by PropStore.com, where you can find your very own piece of entertainment memorabilia from screen-used props to costumes. Now, here's your host, Brian Garner.
So on this week's episode of Be More Super, the podcast, I'm thrilled to have two incredible guests with me today from Hope Street Pods, A Classical Christmas Chord. We've got Nido and Rona Rees. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Do you know what?
So excited to be here.
Do you know what? I'm so excited to have you both here, because not only are you cemented very firmly within the acting community and also voice community as well, but I've listened to the whole podcast and I think it's awesome. And I've enjoyed it from the first episode to the last, and I didn't want it to stop. You know, I want to know what happens next. You know, I am literally a modern man in the way that I like my rom-coms, and I love Hallmark movies. I'm just guilty. It's my guilty pleasure. It really, really is. But before we talk about this wonderful podcast series, I wanted to find out a bit more about you two individually. So, Rona, you're originally from Down Under. From Australia.
Correct.
And yes. I was reading your bio and you actually worked with Ernie Dingo. And then I thought, it's a name that I'm familiar with. And I saw a picture, Crocodile Dundee too. And he played Charlie. And I was like, wow. So what brought you over from Australia over to Canada?
The film industry and a sense of adventure. Yeah, I was a child actor in Australia, as your research tells you. And I wasn't from a showbiz family at all. So when I hit that kind of awkward late teens, early 20s phase where suddenly the talent pool expands and you're not sort of a part of the kids show world, but you're not really quite old enough to play, you know, the cops or the lawyers yet, the brakes kind of went on my career unintentionally. And I, like a good little daughter, followed my parents' advice and went to college and got a degree and got a job and was absolutely miserable. And discovered pretty quickly that a desk job was not really for me. And it wasn't until I had a mutual friend who I had heard had moved over to Canada that I'd even considered Vancouver as a destination for film. You know, everyone always talks about LA or New York maybe. But I'd been to Canada before. I'd done the stereotypical Aussie thing and done a ski season in Whistler and knew that I loved the city and loved the country, and just decided to follow the dream.
Wow. I mean, at least you chose Vancouver and not Toronto, because it's a warmer side that you've gone from Australia over to Vancouver, which is nice. And Nee, how did you get into the industry? Because again, you've done so much stuff in your career, from Watchmen, which I think is an awesome film. I was chatting to David Hayter the other day, who actually wrote The Watchmen, the screenplay. And then you've done tons of voice work as well as TV and film. So how did you get into the industry and why?
Well, I'm originally from Victoria, which is also called Vancouver Island. So I was from a smaller town, always dreaming of being in film and television. And we didn't really have a market for it, you know, unless it was like a massive film. We had like Little Women, which was a big deal in the early 90s. So I started out in musical theater. There were a lot of pantomimes as well. And so I kind of took those skills and went to Vancouver, where we had family friends over there. And so it seemed close enough that, and you know, especially with shows like X-Files, where you're seeing you're watching the show regularly and seeing the city that you've interacted with, it seemed so much more tangible. And so, yeah, I took the leap, much smaller leap than Rona did, but nonetheless, I took a leap. And I definitely made it, it felt more like home to me than Victoria did.
And what's your favorite musical that you've been in?
Ooh, I'm a little perverse, so I like Heather's the Musical.
Yeah, do you know what? We watched that on TV for the first time the other night because my wife's never. I mean, I've been in the West End. I was in Casper the Musical in the West End, I've done cabaret as well, and back in the day, and she's never been to the West End. And we went to go and see Wicked, which she thought was fantastic. Oh, wow. And literally, so I was in tears. Amazing. But Heather's, what a cool musical. Is completely different to your traditional musical. And I was like, wow, okay, this is really, really good. So let's talk about Hope Street Pods, because, you know, it's a trend that's happening now. Yay! It's a trend that's
representing.
You know, where people are doing more the radio play style podcast, which I think is fantastic, because this has taken us back over 50 years with the Archers in the UK that still go into this day, I think, which is incredible. So if you could talk about how you got involved with this, because obviously, Ronan, not only do you play Tulip, but you direct as well. And then Nii, you play Lena Cord, which is a great character again. Could you tell us about how you got involved with this project?
Shall I start, Nii?
Yes, I was just going to say you start, because you kind of came earlier than I did.
So Rana Shemarani, who is the writer and producer of the podcast, approached me, I guess it was just earlier this year, and she had this great concept to, you know, create something that lives sort of in that Hallmark rom-com romance realm, but in the podcast format. And she knew that I live and work a lot in vocal booths. So she reached out to me, and I've been a fan of hers for years. She does really interesting work, and she's a go-getter, and I love that. So I right away was like, yep, like whatever you need, I'm here to help. And it was a real passion project, because she got some great funding from Creative BC to be able to make it happen. But, you know, we're all kind of pitching in and there for the love of it. And I just feel really lucky that we were able to pull in incredible cast like Nii, like Ian, like Hero. All of our cast were just incredible. And I think, you know, maybe we got a little bit lucky with the timing of everything. It was a bit of a quieter year for a lot of our acting community, as we were affected by the strikes down south. And it was just a great time for people to come together and do something that was fun and different and kind of heartwarming, you know? Like, we don't always get to do these feel-good things, so that's how I came on board. Rana approached me. I put up my hand to direct cast. And I would like to put one disclaimer that I did not cast myself. Rana asked me if I would play Tulip, and I agreed. But there's something maybe a bit ick when you see that someone is like casting director and then also playing a role. Oh, just cast yourself. No, Rana asked me.
I disagree. I disagree. Hearing your voice and how you kind of carry, you're like the heart of the whole piece.
Yeah, but I didn't cast myself. Totally, that's what I'm saying.
I cast you.
But your part was fantastic as the narrator. I was thinking when I was listening to it, wouldn't it be great to just have you narrate my life, you know, every day? You know, I wake up and I go to work. Really? It would be great. We should have that, you know?
Yeah. Brian needed to change the light bulbs in his studio.
There we go. and Nii, how did you get involved? I mean, was you approached? Was there an audition process for yourself?
There was an audition process, absolutely. But I was extra excited because I saw Rona's name on the project as the voice director. So I, might have worked a little bit more, put more effort into my audition because I really wanted to work with Rona as a voice director because I never had that opportunity yet. I know Rona personally, and we actually met through improv. We were on an improv team together, and so I know what she's capable of. So I wanted to kind of see what the magic she could work in a booth. And so I got cast as Lena. And I mean, from listening, what an incredible cast. I just thought everyone's voices worked so well together, but also like different, like complementary.
Completely agree. I mean, if you could give us a rundown, a bit about the actual storyline, tell the viewers and listeners, what they can expect from listening to this show.
Me? Okay, well, sure. But as Lerona said, it is a heartwarming, feel-good rom-com set in the holiday times. It centers in the beginning around Lena Court, who I voice. So she recently inherited her father's classical music shop, and it's kind of suffering this year because classical music is a bit of a hard sell. So as she struggles with that, the other side of the story is Zach Sellers, who was her kind of high school flame. Has turned into a big pop star, but he's had some bad press, so they've sent him home to Hope Street to for a little time out. And so they run into each other, and hijinks ensue because they never really broke up. So a lot of unsaid things that, holiday magic brings out.
And I love how diverse this cast is and the storyline and just everything going on. Watch the pylon, I think it was. And it's little bits like that. And I love how at the end of each episode, you want to be listening to the next one straight away. You're like, oh no, you've just left me on a right cliffhanger. No. So thank goodness the episodes are there. I mean, is there a plan to maybe have more episodes, like continue the story? Because I wanted more, and there was only, I think it was seven episodes, I think it was. I've subscribed anyway, so good to know that I have subscribed. I'm waiting for more. I mean, was it a conscious effort, like sort of decision making to have those amount of episodes, or was an opportunity to maybe stretch it out a bit more?
I think, working again within somewhat limited resources, I think what we managed to pull off was pretty amazing. And I'm so proud of the quality of the performances and of the finished product. Our engineer, our musicians, our sound designers, I think just pulled together something amazing. So I honestly think we gave you every possible second we could have. But I know that Rana definitely has plans for more from Hope Street. And whether that is a continuation of Lena's story or if it's other character, colorful characters from the town, we'll have to wait and see.
I mean, obviously, in the context of voice acting, Nee, how does your approach to, say, the character of Lena and how you approach bringing her to life, because it's a bit different to, say, visually on screen. You've got the ability to obviously use your body and your facial expression, so it must be quite difficult to bring that character to life as much as you have done, over, this show. I mean, how do you approach the character compared to, say, if you was on screen?
But I mean, you totally nailed it with the fact that like I don't have access to my body language, my face. So it's kind of investing everything into your voice. It takes a lot more energy, I think, to convey everything with just one element of you. I know Rona's big note for me when I first came in was be more me, which was really sweet to kind of, make the character more my own. I mean, Rana's writing was so delightful as well. It totally gave me like Nora Ephron vibes, which I'm a big fan of. So I think that was something that helped me easily slip into the character of Lena. I think it was the environment we were in. We all got to record as an ensemble together, which sometimes, especially with the pandemic, we were recording solo, like individually in the booth, and hearing the other person's recording in your ears. So it was really nice, and I think you got some special kismet energy with everybody being in the room together.
Which must have been such a magical experience, because, you know, during the pandemic, yeah, people are in their vocal booths, but I suppose nothing replaces the fact of being opposite your actual, you know, your partners in crime, in the way that when you're doing the script and you're reading it out, you can get those facial expressions from them, and you can up your game. I mean, as a director, Rona, I mean, how different is directing a voice project like this opposed to, say, you know, a visual project, you know, a TV program or film?
Yeah, it's definitely a whole different ballgame. You know, one of the fun things is there is a bit more flexibility in the recording. Although on camera, of course, you can edit takes together if the continuity works. With, you know, a podcast or animation, we can chop and change and pick and choose as much as we like. That being said, of course, like Nee said, being able to record as an ensemble and just feed off each other's energy and just see where the other person is playing the stakes is so important to the performances. I've directed characters individually for animated stuff, and it's great because you can make it happen and it's safe and they can be around the world. But, you know, often you're reading in with the characters and you're having to remember, okay, how did the character that this person is in the scene with say it? I need a performance that's going to match that. And it's really just nowhere near as organic as the magic that happens in the room together. So, yeah, it's fun and it's playful. And I love being in the control booth as a voice actor and a director. It's fun to be able to play on both sides of those. And this, I have to just say, Nee was in, you know, basically almost every scene of this radio play. And she worked so hard, but her energy, like, never dipped. And I'm just, yeah, super proud and so glad that we had her as our lead. Even if she did go to Playland on the Saturday night of our weekend record, I was very concerned she was going to lose her voice from screaming. I was like, if you get scared because you're going to Fright Nights, you better scream on the inside.
I screamed on the inside. It was all these haunted houses. It was poor planning on my side of things. But I fessed up to my director. I said, hey, I will scream on the inside.
So does this explain the reason why your voice was slightly a bit husky in places when you were laughing?
Oh, you caught that. Okay. Very good. Perhaps.
I think Nee and I both have some natural husk to our voice.
We do have natural rasp and husk.
Yeah. I mean, it's got to be challenging though to direct it, and obviously, I mean, with the freedom that you've got with the material. I mean, did you have a bit of leeway on changing a few things from a directing standpoint? And what has been the most challenging part for you directing this Motley Crue into producing what the end project has come to light?
Well, the great thing was that we had Rana in the room with us. And that's always great because you can bounce around ideas on the fly. She can yes or no them. And it's just great to be able to collaborate in that way. You know, there are a couple of jokes that I wanted to offer alternatives on that we played with, and little improvised moments that the actors brought that just, again, it's those things that you can't ever predict. It's creating the right environment for those actors to bring their magic. I think the most challenging thing, honestly, was probably just the timeline that we had. We recorded at like double time of what we usually would on like a big, you know, like animated union gig or something like that. You know, we're working on an indie style budget with basically almost donated studio time. Thank you, Hadron Films. Big shout out for them for loaning us their studio space for the weekend at an amazing rate. But yeah, we just had to move so fast. But this was the wonderful thing about having such a great cast is that they were getting it straight away. So it was like, let's find the scene, let's tweak, and let's do one for you guys and see what happens. So the time was the biggest challenge, but the cast made it easy because they were all absolute rock stars.
And what I loved was from your Instagram account is that you dressed the studio in Christmas lights, which I thought was amazing. I mean, what time of the year did you actually record, you know, your vocals?
October.
Ah, so early. Yeah. So early. So you had the Christmas decorations out early. So, Nee, what was the best thing about playing Lena, and what was your favourite part of her journey to record?
Oh, that's so tough, because I really did fall in love with Lena. I mean, I laughed a lot in the studio. So, and the thing was, because we were recording as an ensemble, our mics were hot even when you weren't speaking. So when everyone was acting and they were so funny and delightful, you're like, I can't overstep, I can't laugh, but you could feel everyone's, and I think that's what it was. It was, as Lena, I got to interact with every single character. And so that was such a joy to be in the booth with all these different people with such an array of talent. And I'm actually newer to voiceover. And so to be able to work with such veterans in the industry as well, I learned a lot. This is actually my first audio play or
really?
Yeah, podcast. Yeah.
Well, from my view, you wouldn't have guessed because, I mean, I don't know if it's a testament to Rona and the studio, but again, when definitely. You said about the sound engineering, it was just so recorded so well, and the fact that it just made it, I don't know how to describe it, sort of 3D, you know, it was like the voices are around and the music and the sound effects and everything like that was just perfectly balanced. For me, because there's certain radio plays out there that can be quite harsh and that you can tell that they haven't taken the time and care in that. I mean, who do you feel that this radio play podcast will resonate with? I mean, what's the audience that you're aiming for? Either of you, if you want to answer.
I think anyone who just loves a good romance and needs a heartwarming way to get into the Christmas spirit, you know, it's, I think a lot of people have screen fatigue. You know, we spend so much time on our screens and, you know, whether that's work or play or both, I think, you know, podcasts, people are turning to them more and more because they're something that you can enjoy while you're cooking or while you're walking the dog, or, you know, there's something you can kind of enjoy while multitasking and you don't have to use your poor little tired eyeballs. So I just think, so you know, if you want to like get into the festive spirit while you wrap your Christmas presents and not have to see what's on a screen, this is for you. Would you agree, Nee?
I absolutely agree. I mean, it definitely helped when it first came out. It definitely got me in the holiday spirit, and I love having, like, you know, I don't do chocolate. I'm actually allergic. So what I do is I have like apple cider, like warm apple cider, when I listen, and it just makes me feel so festive.
Oh, do you know what, apple cider? You can't really get in the UK. You see, the thing is, for me, the thing to get myself into Christmas every single year is when I have my first eggnog latte. So I've got to go to Starbucks and have an eggnog latte. And I've got relatives in America. So, you know, you can get eggnog everywhere. But in the UK, you can't. Mm-hmm. You've got to order it at an obscene amount of money to get eggnog. So if I go to Starbucks, I've got to have it. And it's just amazing. It really is. But apple cider,
well, Brian,
again,
I'm
is lovely.
Flying to London on Friday. Do I need to bring you some eggnog?
Eggnog. I love
special
it.
Delivery.
But, But thing is, in America as well, they have eggnog and they put like, is it like brandy or something in it as well? They have it like,
rum.
and I'm like, wow, okay, never tried that, but I like my lattes, I really, really do. So I wanted to ask something that I've always wanted to know, because obviously the acting in industry can be quite fickle at times, because you've got to look a certain way, you've got to, you know the stereotypes. So is it different within the voice community in the, you know, the way that you get cast? I mean, because it's great, because, you know, I've always said I've got a face for radio, so, you know, the fact that I could get a chance to maybe do voice work in the future, you know, how hard is the industry compared to, say, acting on screen?
Nate, do you want to take this?
Ooh, okay. I mean, you have a... chime in, please.
Okay.
I'm just saying, I am newer to voiceover, but I found in some ways, yes, it can be easier because you're not beholden to how you look. However, then that means all the focus is on your voice. And I think a lot of people who first start get into voiceover think, oh, I have an interesting, cool voice. Easy. They forget they also have to act.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to act very well because you now no longer have your other facilities to use with it. So I think it's a double-edged sword in the sense that it is easier because you don't have to be judged on your looks, but you're being judged on one thing then, which is your voice and your ability to act and to make the words jump off the page. I think that's always key.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think that there's something so liberating about voice because, yeah, you're never too fat or too thin or too tall or too short, even too young or too old, you know. You're not, like you said, you're not beholden to this body that you're living in. You know, my first big animated role, I played a perky little turtle for like a whole year on Littlest Pet Shop. And I just loved that, like, this is my gig. I'm a perky little turtle. And that's, you know,
that's
I don't
cool.
get to play. Like, of course, there are, you know, there's mocap and there are ways that you can do that sort of role with your body. But again, I think voice, you have to tap into so much imagination because you are creating the landscape and you're imagining the sound effects. And it just, you have to tap into this childlike imagination that we are so often told as adults to suppress.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when people make that switch over from on camera to voice, I think one of the things they struggle with is because you are only using your voice, you actually need to engage all your facilities to get this kind of slightly maybe bigger performance out of your voice. And that means, you know, getting big and animated and making silly faces. And, you know, on camera, it's like, feel it within and then do nothing with your face. So it's, I think when people make that switch, it's like a big, it's all the same skills, but you're applying them in a totally different way. And it's a big tonal shift.
It's a massive adjustment. Yeah.
I mean, do you have plans in place in what you want to achieve in your career, you know, compared to like when you started to now? I mean, do you have a plan in the people that you want to work with or what you want to achieve, awards or anything like that?
Well, I mean, with this, I got to be my first lead in my first audio drama. And also I got to work with Rona. So like three yeses right there. Woo!
And bigger, Nate, and giga.
No, I'm just let me have this. Let me have this. I'm in happiness right now.
That is awesome. And Rona, I mean, obviously you've done hell of a lot in your career, over 28 years, you know, in the industry, which is a shockingly amount of, I mean, you must have started when you was one. Do you know what I mean? Because 28 years is a long time. Did you have a plan in place in when you started and has that changed throughout the years?
Definitely. I think I started as a, you know, I started when I was 11. as a fame-hungry, attention-seeking brat. And there is still that side of me that is alive and well and pokes its head out every now and then looking for compliments and attention. But I've evolved so much as a storyteller. Now I write, I direct, and I have my eye at the moment on directing my first feature next year. And it is so much more creatively satisfying to me to create and tell my own stories than auditioning sometimes on camera for two lines in a series. And even if you get those two lines, or you get those, even if it's a bigger role, 4 days on set, it's great and I love it and I'll never stop being a performer. But yeah, my goal, I don't necessarily want to be famous anymore. I think a famous life is a complicated life, and I really like being able to like bop around the world doing whatever I want with no one really caring. But I'd love to reach a level in my career where I can choose my projects, by what I want to do, not by I need to make money. And also have income for a comfortable life. I don't need Ferraris or anything like that, but we live in a pretty expensive city. Nia, I'm not sure if you're gonna go back to that small town of yours and fall in love, but Vancouver
Wow,
does get pretty
stuck.
expensive.
I tell you what, Cedar Hills sounds a good place to live. I tell you, I've
Yeah.
already envisioned the town centre, like the town, like sort of marketplace, and the tree, and you being on stage, and turning the lights on, and that is all in my brain. I mean, I've got to ask as well, not to be specific, but what advice would you give, say, someone in their early 40s from England, who maybe wants to, start a career in voice work? Where would they start? I mean, not to be specific, just random,
I mean, you take a class. Yeah, you take a class and you learn and you practice your craft and you hone your skills until the people that you are training with say, "Hey, Brian," just as an example of a name,
Ooh, good one.
it's time to make a demo and get an agent. And then you try and get rep and you start auditioning and you do like 150 auditions and book two things maybe, and you surrender to the long game of a career that is basically 98% re rejection, but you're in it for the love of it. And that 2% where you get to work with beautiful friends who just make you laugh so much that actually I want to change my most challenging thing. Most challenging thing was to get them to stop laughing after takes so I could give them redirects and we could keep going. There was a lot of
Okay,
laughter.
you
There was
got
even
it.
times where I'm like
Yeah.
in their booth, like,
Yeah.
yeah, that, yeah, good, yeah, hello, stop
I know, we're like,
laughing,
oh, sorry.
having too
We
much
felt like
fun.
naughty kids. We're like,
So
oops,
basically,
sorry.
you were
We're
mother
naughty
hen. You were
kids.
mother
I
hen,
was.
you know,
I
trying
had to
to.
crack the whip. Yeah, we had a lot of
Yes, Mom.
material to
Sorry, Mom.
record. Yeah. What about you, Nia? Do you have any different advice?
No, I think that was amazing. And also, know what you like. I think what you want to do. Like, I think something for me was I really wanted to focus on animation. That was something I really wanted. Some people are really more interested in just doing commercials. Other people want to do video games. Right, and all of those different genres have different types of voices and different types of deliveries, and if you love it, feast on it, right? So I love cartoons, so I watch a bunch of different cartoons to inspire me.
I mean, people out there think it's easy to do because you speak to anyone during the pandemic and they're all saying, yeah, I'm a voice actor.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
You think...
It's a big time for it.
Really?
Yeah.
And I've got to imagine it was quite oversaturated during the pandemic because you had a lot of actors, you know, trying to make ends meet. Do you see a change within the industry since the pandemic in the way of the amount of people doing, you know, the job of voice?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think a lot of people upped their games, a lot of people who'd wanted to try it, finally got around to it, finally upped their setups. But it can be a tough business to break into. And I think that, you know, it's only the ones that are still sticking it out and haven't given up yet that are actually going to, if making a living out of it is what they're aiming for, then they're the ones that are going to get there eventually. Because it just takes a long time to get known and trusted and, you know, get out there. So I think, yeah, a lot of people started. I don't know how many people have continued. And, you know, Nii is someone who, as she said, was really interested in animation and took classes and got coaching and has, like, is a testament to if you just keep working at it, then you will succeed. And that is exactly what she's done. She's in series that are out and just kicking butt left, right, and center.
And just what Rona is not mentioning is that she was like my biggest cheerleader in the beginning. She was so supportive of me wanting to do this and so encouraging and helped so much. She was like, reach out to this person. Have you met this person? Just really connecting and getting me set up for it. So thank you.
Okay, but here's the cool thing. Another casting disclaimer. although we are friends and I have helped you grow in this side of your career, I sent a short list to Rana for casting. Mm-hmm. And I listened to a lot of auditions. And the great thing was that you were on there because you were talented, not because you were my friend. And then it was Rana's choice. So it was pretty cool because I was like, I get to work with Nii, but I didn't even choose you. So, yeah, it just... Again, another disclaimer. I didn't just cast myself and cast my friends. There was a process. I'm a professional. She earned it.
But it just makes it all the sweeter when that happens, right?
Totally. Yeah.
So you're not doing a James Gunn that everyone's criticizing him for casting his brother in all his projects. So down to the last few questions, I just wanted to ask, what's your favourite go-to holiday movie of all time? Because Christmas time, you've got all these classics. I mean, what is the one movie that you watch every single year?
I mean,
just one. Hey, you go, Nii.
One. I mean, I watch Die Hard every year.
Yes. Christmas.
Yeah.
It is a Christmas movie. It is a Christmas movie.
Thank you. Thank
it
you.
It is.
Oh, I'm definitely with the right people. Thank you.
Yeah, I watch Die Hard. Home Alone is always just such a fun. Like, I think no matter what age
one or two.
You are, it's so fun. Oh, either. Take a pick.
Yeah, right?
I guess Lost in New York is the real one.
Extra hard. Yes!
Yeah.
The second one is, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially. Yeah.
And then, do you know what one I rediscovered a couple years ago that I've added into my roster is Gremlins.
Yes, it is a Christmas movie. I love Gremlins.
So fun. Mm. Like, just such a fun watch.
Oh,
do you want to know a fun fact about Gremlins?
Yeah.
I'm so excited.
Yes.
So, you know when he goes into the shop and he goes, what is this? And the shop owner says, Mugwai. Mugwai literally means demon. So he's telling him, honestly, it's a demon. And he goes, oh, it's a Mugwai.
Love it.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Oh, my God. I love that.
Wow.
Christmas fact of the day.
Oh, you see, my go-to movie every single year is Santa Claus the Movie with Dudley Moore and John Lithgow.
Oh, yes.
For me, that and the Santa Claus in that, I thought when I was a child that was a real Santa Claus because he just looks like Santa Claus. I think it was Grizzly Adams, the actor that plays Grizzly Adams, that plays Santa. So what is next for you two? Obviously, we've got holidays coming up. You've been both working on a project called, is it something Time? Time Helmet? Is it?
Oh, Time Helmet.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think that's so, in post. So, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's in post. I mean, is there anything else coming out or that you're working on that you can mention?
Rona, do you have anything?
Sure. Let's see. Right now I'm on an episode of Upload that's streaming on Prime.
I love that show.
So I mean, good. It's a kind of blink and you'll miss me kind of role.
No, stop.
I have a project that... I don't know if I can say the name, but next year I will have my first, in 28 years in the industry, I will have my first project that has a cinematic release. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
So yeah, follow me on socials and you'll hear all about it when it comes out. But for me, my main thing is, yeah, I made a short called Freya that is online if anyone wants to watch it. It's on YouTube. If you search on the Dust channel on YouTube, it's Freya. If you're outside of Canada, inside Canada, it's on CBC Gem. And we are hoping to go to picture next year on a feature, and that's a big deal.
And you did Freya with a friend of the show, which is Praneet. He's been on the show twice. Amazing
and
guy.
He was also in it.
Yeah. Oh wow. I need to watch it. I saw it and I was thinking, where can you watch it? So is it YouTube or is it on a website or?
Yep, it's on the Dust channel on YouTube. So if you just literally go on there and search Freya, you'll see my face, Nee's face, Praneet's face. Be warned though, it is not child friendly, not safe for work, and vibe-wise, probably the opposite to a classical Christmas chord.
That's true.
We'll see.
I love all the disclaimers.
Yeah. It's very American, isn't it? You know, the disclaimers at the bottom of the screen.
I'm doing a lot of disclaimers this thing.
I can put that on post. Don't worry. And Nee, what are you got coming up?
I'm in a new show called Sight Unseen. It will be in the States on the CW. It will be on CTV in Canada, but I'm not sure when it's going to come outside of those two countries. Usually probably a few months later, hopefully. So I am guest starring in one of those episodes, episode 7. And I also... I'm in a video game. It's like a sci-fi point and click adventure, like kind of like choose your own adventure. So there's no fighting. And that comes out first quarter. So they're thinking February next year on Steam, Xbox and Nintendo Switch. And it's called 1000 Times Resist.
Wow.
Cool.
Wow. So very, very busy. I look forward to everything you do in the future. And thank you so much for coming on to talk about...
Wait, Brian, wait. I remembered something that's way more on point. I'm in a Hallmark Christmas movie that's on in 2 days called Heaven Down Here.
Heaven Down Here?
Yay!
Yeah. Make a note.
It's Thursday, December 14th. On the Hallmark Movies and Mystery Channel. There you go. That's more on brand.
And we get that in the UK as well, which is great because I love my Hallmark movies. I think they're great. Forget like big budget, independent movies and like small like TV movies. I've got all the love for. I just think they're fantastic. Independent movies, I think that you get a lot more heart and soul in them because they're less controlled by the big corporations that say that you can't do this and you can't do that. Yeah. So you get a bit of freedom. But have a lovely holiday, as they say over the pond. I mean, do you say Merry Christmas or is it just happy holidays?
I think it depends.
Depends who you're talking to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it really?
I prefer to say happy holidays because I feel like it's more encompassing.
Okay. Okay. So happy holidays. Be good, and you get lots of presents, I presume. But thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
This was so fun.
Thank you for listening to Be More Super, the podcast. This podcast has been brought to you by PropStore.com. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please subscribe and leave a rating and review. To stay up to date with Be More Super and get all the behind-the-scenes content, you can follow us on Instagram at Be More Super, the podcast, and on Twitter at Be More Super. Keep safe and stay super.